Happy Wednesday.
Here we are, the middle of another week.
In the middle of another COVID week.
Yes. Oh, COVID, what's that?
No, it used to be this thing. It's not a thing anymore, apparently.
I kind of remember it vaguely.
Yeah.
I guess.
People are trying to say good morning. Maybe we can just dive in and introduce ourselves. I'm Mark Van Steenhoek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And this is episode 188.
We're getting towards 200. I think we're going to make it.
I think, well, that was me knocking on the wood. This is also part two of three of our Hope Amidst Vest. Beep.
I was trying to think about like how to say that. It was F Storkery.
What about Curry?
Yeah.
and so the idea here is like, because we kind of like pointing out empire and fascism all the time. Like, how do you have hope amidst all this?
Right.
And so we're framing the response to that along the lines of spiritual life. So that's what we're talking about this weekend.
Yeah. And actually, here's a good answer to what is COVID. I like this Virgil's comment here.
COVID, I think it has something to do with crows.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of the robot bird empire. So.
And apparently, Robert says we are over COVID in Alabama, apparently.
Yeah, many other places too. Montana, there's no COVID in Montana anymore. A lot of places.
Forkery or fluffery?
There we go. I like the
forkery. Right.
Yeah, forkery. That's a classic thing.
Nice.
Switch. Yeah.
And maybe before, I just want to do a little commercial thing because this usually is tucked in at the end where we talk about the spiritual direction program. It's just kind of a little advertisement at the end.
Yeah.
I wanted to put this out front and center because we're going to be full of applicants soon. So
because it's happening. Yeah.
It's happening and people are applying. And, you know, I'm most of those people will probably say, yes, I want to do it after they've been accepted. People sometimes trail off, but there's not a lot of spots. That's the idea. Like, if you want to do this program or you have questions about it, reach out, talk to us, and we'll go from there. And it's going to be great.
Look, you know, I just was noticing. I mean, you did the logo, so it shows how much I was paying attention. You've got even a little robot bird in the logo.
Yes. I would like to think that the Holy Spirit is the original robot bird.
The original robot bird. Yeah, I think you're right.
So when God created Earth,
with a British accent,
God is like, I don't know if all these fleshy beings are sufficient, so I'm going to send my great robot guardian, which we call the Holy Spirit. And that robot bird was like, I need help. I need help. So that robot bird, the Holy Spirit, created all the other robot birds, all the other birds in general. You know, even chickens. Chickens are robot birds that create little food modules for us.
Yes. Yes, meat units.
Yeah. God, we're all so far afield.
God, we just lost it completely. Okay, so back to the topic at hand. So Monday, we really allowed ourselves to kind of sit in the vast fuckery and just be like, what does that do? So that creates this sense of desire to for transformation, but also at the same time it creates a realization of our own powerlessness, in the sense of I as an individual can't fix this. Now you know, if we stay in that as a separate human individual, or if we do our activism out of that space, oftentimes what you see, you know, is then this sense of burnout, right? And this sense of kind of giving up, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, beforehand I was talking with Mark and I was saying, yeah, the quintessential example of this, right, are the 60s radicals that then became hedge fund managers. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh yeah, you know, the 60s, awesome, all you need is love, like we're going to change the world, civil rights, blah blah blah.
And these weren't dabbler activists, that
right? No,
Jerry Rubin is the one everyone knows about, and he was super duper involved.
Yeah very involved. And of course this is particularly, I mean not exclusively, but it's certainly particularly a white phenomenon, right? So you had all these white kids in college and
white affluent or middle class especially. Yeah
and you know, and then the world didn't get fixed, right? And then there was this sense of like, oh, you know, we're not doing this, so you know, I think I'll become a banker. And in recent times, there isn't so much the same thing that's being talked about, but one of the things that is being talked about a lot in activist circles is the kind of burnout, right? The exhaustion, you know, you're working really hard, you're, you know, knocking door to door, you're organizing protests and events and activities and, you know, and maybe things are happening, maybe they're not. But at a certain point, this level of burnout sets in, right? And so, so this is where the spiritual life starts to offer kind of a different approach or alternative that says, okay, yes, I'm doing things out in the world, but I'm also both looking inward and outward in a different way to say, well, is there some other kind of movement going on? Right. Is there some non-material activity happening that both I can connect with and also that can sustain me while I'm engaged in work in the world that often doesn't seem to be doing all that much?
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a huge tension in lefty spaces, or even if you don't, some people don't like to use the left-right paradigm. I get, but if you're struggling against oppression or injustice, there's this huge tension, and it's even like embedded in the word you just use, material. Like if you're a Marxist, all there is material, dialectical materialism. Like this is this idea, like really, and I feel this impulse within myself that really the only thing we can do is throw ourselves at revolution, and then eventually it'll break through. So there's kind of this forcefulness. There's discernment in that sense would be like trying to make wise choices with the information at hand, which that's not so bad. But this idea of the spiritual life, like to a lot of folks that I know who've kind of moved from Christianity to full Marxist-Leninist in a more almost atheistic mode, see all the spirituality stuff as distracting crap or just a mere bit of a sheen of poetry laid over reality.
Forkery or fluffery.
Forkery or fluffery. And so that's a very real tension. Like, okay,
oh, yeah.
Even if you're not a lefty, this tension between how much is this dance with the spirit synergistic? Like, you know, you can be almost so fatalistic where God works all things out and you don't have to do anything. And if you try to do anything, it's work. Like there's kind of that sort of impulse mm-hmm. in spiritual circles. And then, of course, you know, anything we do, we're going to have to do through our own sheer will and intelligence. And to me, this spiritual life really at its best brings both of those tensions without feeling like a need to even entirely resolve the tension. It sits right with the tension, which to me is, again, the spiritual life allows you to sit with tension without having to fix it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the... I mean, the materialist part is not just the tension arising out of, you know, Marxism or any particular political philosophy, right? I mean, this is one of the primary tensions in our society and world, particularly in the industrialized world, where, you know, we are very much formed by this scientific materialist view, right? That, yeah, that the only thing that exists is material reality. And this is something that, you know, gained a lot of traction in the 20th century. And, you know, and there are a lot of people that are very allied with that. And that is, again, the primary sort of metaphysics that consciously or unconsciously we're given, certainly in our country. And of course, this is a very minority worldview throughout human history. And the majority of societies, and of course, certainly all what we might call traditional societies, indigenous societies, all the spiritual traditions have said, no, there is this non-material reality. We could call this the realm of the spirit, enlightened mind, you know, Krishna consciousness, whatever different tradition you subscribe to. There is this non-material reality that has a tremendous impact on what is going on here, but it's, you know, not as obvious, right? And of course, as a scientist, what's interesting to me as well is how science itself is coming to recognize the truth of this, right? That many of the things that are going on in physics and quantum physics, various other disciplines, really are recognizing that what we call the material stuff that we can see and feel and touch and experience through our five senses is not the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. And this, it's interesting. So I've been teaching a class on kind of this sort of stuff, spirituality in action. And, you know, this example you brought up earlier of the Jerry Rubin types, this is, you know, I say this all the time. This is one of the reasons why a really engaged, gung-ho white activist is still scary to, you know, people who, like, people of color, or the way men are scary towards feminists, because there's this assumption, this recognition that, like, yeah, you're into this now. You're about this. You're kind of nerding out on activism, but it isn't necessarily transforming you. As soon as this becomes difficult, or you hit burnout, you'll move on.
And I just had somebody give me an example of this just yesterday, where, you know, this is somebody working in a church, and you know, they've been kind of caught up in the, you know, George Floyd activism stuff, right? Like many of these white churches. And so they've done a few book studies, and they've you know, had a couple little small groups about this. And then, you know, this person is planning some summer group activities or whatever. And, you know, one of the wealthy white parishioners is like, well, you know, we've done all these books now. Like, can't we just do something easy this summer? Like, can't we now just forget about this? Like, we've been groovy for 6 months, and, you know, now we're kind of happy with that, and let's just go back to our privilege.
Yeah. Or I'm trying to avoid figuring out so that people don't know who I'm talking about, but there's in intentional community circles, kind of the radical people who read Shane Claiborne type circles, there's a whiteness problem, because intentional communities of kind of more of the radical post-evangelical sense tend to be driven by white people who realize that we're kind of fucked up. And so we're like, let's form community and fix ourselves. And then we'll also somehow be saviors to others at the same time. Like, so there's this, it's like a pressure cooker for all white pathologies, really. And there's someone within the intentional community's world who kind of organizes and sees himself as a leader. And I try to talk to him about this race stuff. And he's like, Mark, my community went through racism stuff in the 70s, back when it was really a thing.
Back when racism was really a thing.
Yeah. Black Panthers were still around. Like, you know, I don't want to be lectured by someone who's coming up. That's kind of his take. And so, like, okay, that's the other thing. Like, we tend, and this is another tension here in spiritual life. And you can see this even, like, if you see a church advertising a job opening for director of spiritual formation, that what they mean is education in the sort of one-way monological sense. And so there's this bad habit, again, many of us are formed to think that information poured into here somehow trickles down into your body, and then all of a sudden you start living it out, which is BS. So you get these gung-ho activists learning the right things. They did 3 book studies, and now they know it. And we don't even know what transformation is really like. Like, for many of us, the closest we get to transformation or that idea is we got teary-eyed at a Bible camp and gave our lives over to Jesus as though it was like a one and done. And so this question of, like, it really becomes important. How do you sit with tension? How do you pay attention to your thoughts and your actions with curiosity and graciousness towards yourself so you can keep growing? And how do you recognize that, like, I'm just gonna keep using Jerry Rubin as an example, like becoming a big rich dude. Did he see that somehow the problem was just out there in the world and he couldn't fix it, so he gave up and said, well, I'm just gonna do this instead? Mm-hmm. Did he not see the way that stuff he was fighting against was somehow inside of him? This is the other thing that the spiritual life does.
No, not really.
It's not. Like, I don't want to be super judgy, but I'm assuming I can't see that going very deep. And to me, one of the core insights of the spiritual life is specifically, like, when you're talking about Christianity, like how God becomes flesh and dwells among us. And then the second Adam who, you know, like you have an individual kind of connecting with some totality of humanity. There's this dynamic flow between the person and the system, between God and human. And so if you can't engage in the spiritual life in a way that recognizes all the things I'm fighting against out there are still in here. Mm-hmm. And I need to account for that in how I do my practices and understand myself.
Yeah. And then what starts to happen, you see, as we engage in these practices is that, yeah, we may still be doing a lot of the same things externally, but internally, we also now are becoming aware of this movement of the spirit in the world, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, in this famous Martin Luther King quote that is so popular, particularly in church circles, right? The moral arc of the universe bends towards justice. Yeah. And then people say, well, but you got to get up and kind of jump on it, you know, for it to bend down towards justice. Mm-hmm. And many people have a materialist interpretation of that, right? They're just like, okay, yeah, if enough people get out and work for this externally, it will happen.
Voter turnout.
Yeah, voter turnout, whatever. And again, not that those are bad. Please don't hear that. But
they're
really,
they're not everything.
Yeah, that really, from a spiritual life point of view, that comment, that image, is an internal spiritual reality, right? That we are engaged with this spiritual power that is trending towards justice, and by our connection and involvement with that non-materially, as well as whatever we're doing externally, that is really what is creating this flow towards a better reality. And that also that connection with that powerful loving force, that connection also sustains and enlivens us for the work. Right? So we are becoming uplifted, we are being sustained, but we are also helping to sustain and move the world in a different direction. So I think we've lulled everybody into a
yeah. I don't know if it's state. I don't know if it's that we talk about this so much that people are like, oh, you just same thing, or if it's like we're bogged down in esoterica to people. But there's not a lot of comments right now. This is my challenge to you. Dole them out, friends. Otherwise, we're just going to keep talking. Virgil writes, one and done. I knew folks who were so good at spiritual transformation, they got baptized 4 or 5 times.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of part of the joke, too. Like, and then in charismatic Pentecostals.
Saved every other week.
Yeah, coming up to multiple altar calls, you know, and then if you had the Pentecostal layer of like getting baptized in the Holy Spirit, you know, sometimes then you need a second blessing. Then you need a myriad of revivals. It's like you got to keep getting the injections, man. Paulo, Gus writes, Paulo Freire's work on education, pedagogy of the oppressed, which is a great classic text. Not always an easy, fun read, but a very important one. It's a great place to start, but his book, We Made the Road by Walking by Miles Horton, he talks about it as if it's almost spiritual formation, like y'all are talking about. I've often read Paulo Freire as a mystic because the way, you know, one of the insights of Freire is this idea of consciousness raising, conscientization. I don't know how to pronounce that word effectively. But this idea that if you, the peasants, if they can have understand the truth about themselves and then act in that truth, they fundamentally change the world. So by perceiving the world differently and acting in that new understanding of the world, you change the world by definition. Is a very, that's what praxis is. That's what the spiritual life is about. It's about discerning and perceiving and participating with the work of the Spirit. Khan writes, we are meditating on your words.
Yes.
They're like that's honey flowing into
stunned,
your ears.
Stunned silence. Yeah, and so I think this is, you know, for me, when I think about or when I hear people's frustration of like, well, you know, either it sounds like we're saying that doing little things is not good, or the other thing of like, well, tell us, you know, we want to know what to do, again, externally that is good. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why I think we engage the way that we do, because, you know, this particular lens, right, this lens of seeing things through the rubric of the spiritual life, of spiritual direction, I mean, this is one of the reasons that, you know, we're doing this program, really is a very different way of viewing things. And it's a very different experience of life and reality, and it becomes a very different experience of community. But it's not sort of obvious on the outside, so to speak, right? I mean, you can't give a list and say, okay, if I'm engaged in the spiritual life, here's the 7 activities I would do. Here's the list of activities that I would do if I don't do that. All right.
So here's a bomb from Catherine. You bring up a lot of good stuff here. I'm not commenting because I'm silently panicking about my sense that I failed entirely at transformation. Oh. That's some real heavy talk, but I get it. Made some big mistakes in the white guilt, mushy boundaries, pressure cooker of Christian intentional community. And I'm still puzzling over what long-term faithful activism looks like as a neurodivergent working person with little capacity for some of the most popular activist strategies. I'm there with you. I'm there with you. I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I would say, is that, I mean, I hear that voice in your head that you're talking about. I would also say it's sort of exactly, you know, that it's kind of exactly the opposite, right? I mean, all the things that you've talked about and shared, I even think about the comment you shared the other day about the, you know, switching from purity culture to revulsion at injustice, right? I mean, that so much of what you're engaged in is transformational, and that that in some ways this is the perfect example of what we're talking about, right? Is that, right, our society says, well, if I'm a neurodivergent person who is not as outward as, you know, some, you know, extrovert, you know, gung-ho activist type, right, somehow I've failed at this, right? Or I'm not being as useful. And the spiritual life says, no, that's not necessarily true at all, right? And that's where this non-material piece comes in, and that we discount so much all the time, right? That the internal transformation that you're working with and that you're undergoing sends a powerful vibe out into reality that also is transformational. And again, the materialist, you know, seven steps to a successful ministry view does not take that into account at all.
Don writes, how does your view of spirituality result in social transformation? It's a million-dollar question.
Yeah, well, so this is exactly what I was just getting at, because what begins to happen as we, as both individuals but also groups, are changed people, right? What Howard Thurman would call becoming more human. We begin to affect reality in all kinds of ways. And we do get involved with specific movement work. We act differently, you know, when we make choices about buying things, about where to live, about how to live, whether we share, whether we don't share. I mean, there's a million things that we're doing externally in the world. And when human beings start to become fully human and alive, society starts to change. Mm-hmm.
Part of the assumption that I tend to bring into how I think about what contemplation is. So I find it ironic that a lot of folks, when they're talking about contemplation and attentiveness and different practices, hardly will you see the word solidarity brought up as a contemplative practice. And to me, this is part of the spiritual life should be decentering in some ways and centering in other ways. Like, there's hope that the spirit is alive within us, yes. But there are also, to the extent that we participate in systems of power, there's a great hope that the spirit is at work among people who are experiencing oppression. And that if I want to be contemplative and discern the spirit's work in the world, that I need to look outside myself and then be in solidarity, right? And to me, once you do that, not from a place of like the Jerry Rubin I'm going to fix the world thing, but I'm going to perceive the spirit at work in the world and engage in the spiritual life so that I can understand the world more clearly and participate in that work. Mm-hmm. Anytime then you step out and act from that. But there's the mistake that happens, and this is kind of, on one hand, it's the centering of oneself as the agent of transformation. On the other hand, is this tendency towards dissociation that happens in contemplative circles and mindfulness circles. You bring those together, and there's this great recipe for self-delusion that somehow you can be the conduit for God's presence in the world in some sort of weird, it's all about you sense. Right. Now, I want to be clear when I'm saying that, like, I'm... For people who've been kind of stepped on, I wouldn't say it all that same way. Like, there's a sense in which it's proper for you to be centered and have a lot of hope that God is at work in you too. It's just the problem is with whiteness.
Empowered, yeah.
Yeah, we need to be empowered. Like, there's parts of, I need to be empowered too. Like, there's parts of me that have been crushed, but I can't take that in a direction that somehow reinforces my ability to execute my will upon the world. Mm-hmm. So this is where it gets all dicey. So, even what we're talking about, it's just there's so many potential spots for self-deception right. That you can inflict damage. That's one of my favorite quotes from Simone Weil: "The uprooted uproot wherever they go." And so, to me, in that sense, spirituality is about becoming rooted, non-anxious, so that you can bear the tension. That I can follow the lead of people that are not me. I can be pulled in directions that I struggle against because it puts my power at risk, because I have a faith that the Spirit is at work in the world and that Christ is uniquely present among those who are experiencing oppression. To me, when those elements are missing and someone's talking about spirituality, I start saying, well, I don't know if I want to listen to you.
All right, we got a couple comments, and then I got kind of an image.
Virgil says, not to be the guy who rails about television and the internet and kids and their damned AM radio. AM, what's that? But some of the problem about sustained transformation is that it's really easy to get distracted from sustained, consistent practices, for sure. There's obviously the external application of transformation, but for a lot of us born after 1980, there's a gazillion pieces of internal noise that we first have to learn how to mute. And sometimes part of that learning intention is realizing that our experience breaks down. There's comments over a certain length. I don't know what the magic length is, getting tripped right. off. But I think I see where you're going there. Like, it's not getting easier to be attentive in our society.
No.
So I don't want to rail against the newfangled Facebookery and things like that either, but there's some stuff there that needs to be discerned and engaged with.
Yeah, but it's true that the loudest noise is always between our ears.
Yeah. Some more than others. It's like an echo chamber in here. Virgil says, and to go back to the theme of the episodes, I'm not entirely sure that a lot of the noise I mentioned in my last comment isn't an intentional part of the vast chicanery. One of the best words in the English language that needs to be used more, chicanery, that distracts us from hope.
Oh, it is. It is an intentional part. I mean, these are the voices of internalized oppression and control. And you know, we mentioned that before. I mean, it's a lot cheaper for the empire to get people to control themselves than to have to control them through military force.
Mm-hmm. And this is, again, where that inner transformation, like, as I'm working through this with the class right now, like, misogyny, patriarchy, white supremacy shape all these structures out there, but they also shape my inner structures. And so I cannot divorce the work out there from the work in here. And this is also important. One of the things that pitfalls that people fall into with spirituality is they think it has to be entirely selfless, right? Spiritual transformation generally happens, at least in part, because you believe that there's something in it for you. And that's a good type of selfishness. And so instead of white activists working from a place of altruistic, like, I'm going to help the people who need help, like that kind of posture, it's like, no, I'm desperate for wholeness.
Right.
So I'm going to fight. I'm going to kind of participate in stuff Black Lives Matter is doing, or Black Visions Collective, or Reclaim Black, these local groups, not just because I want to be a helpful white person, because that's part of my liberation too. And it can't be a trite, you know, my liberation is bound up in yours kind of easy quip. It has to be real. And the more that spiritual life takes us into the guts of things, instead of dissociating away from things into positivity, light, and love, but into the guts of things, we can say, look, there's healing here. Anyways, got off on a little sermon there.
That's great. All right, we got David may get the last word.
It's a great quote from Simone Weil. Yep. The uprooted uproot wherever they go. She's a messy character, but brilliant when it came to the insights of that.
Incredible person. So, all right. Well, thank you. Thank you for meditating on our words and for your comments. And Gus, I got to just say, I love that picture of you in the mask with the ginormous beard coming out the bottom.
Yeah, it's like this
best. It's the best mask picture ever.
It's like a hair turtleneck.
Yeah. All right.
We'll see you on Friday.
Love you guys.